This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me?
This is Wade Rathgen. You're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kbf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to the show on these websites at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Professor Mark Rank of Washington University in St. Louis, who I've been trying to get on the show for years, because Mark is one of the premier national experts on the real cost of poverty. Mark, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks a lot, Wade. It's great to be on.
And this time I finally got you on because you just recently put out sort of a definitive study on the cost of poverty. So give people some background on the kind of research you've been doing, and then we'll get to the big numbers.
Yeah, okay. So, for a long time I've been doing work that looks at, across people's lifetimes, the likelihood of them experiencing poverty. And I've done a lot of work on that. But recently I was interested in this question of, what's the cost, the economic cost of poverty to the country as a whole? And so, I started looking into this, and there really had only been in the last 30 years two studies that tried to get at this question. And so what I and a colleague here at WashU did was update some of that work and look at some new costs and came up with an overall estimate of how much childhood poverty is costing us on an annual basis.
And I want to, underline the point. We're not talking about the normal things now when people talk about the cost of poverty, Mark, are we? We're not talking about what the bill for welfare is or Medicaid or school lunches. We're talking about the cost to society at keeping people in poverty, aren't we?
That's right. So we looked at a couple of big items in terms of thinking about this question. One was, what is the cost on our overall economic productivity of our society? Because we know that the kids that grow up in poverty have less education, less skills. They therefore are less economically productive, which again impacts us all. So we looked at that. We know that childhood poverty has a significant effect on children's health. They have worse health. Well, that's a cost that we all bear in terms of that. And then the other big one we looked at was the issue of crime and incarceration, because we know that kids that grow up in poverty, most of them won't engage in crime. But what's that?
No, you're with me. Keep going.
Okay. There's a little bit of an echo there, but
it may be on your end, but we won't worry about that. We're getting the message to people.
So the third big thing we were looking at was this issue of crime, and we know that, as I said, most kids who grow up in poverty don't engage in crime, but there is a higher likelihood. And so, we estimated what the effect of growing up in poverty had on rates of incarceration and criminal justice and those kinds of things. So these were three big items that we looked at in terms of thinking about this question.
Well, and don't forget the other big item you looked at was the cost of poor health for children and others in poverty, right?
That's right. So You know, kids that grow up in poverty are much more likely to have all kinds of things, kind of health issues, both when they're children and when they become adults. And so, yes, that was another big item that we were looking at.
Well, and I bring that point up because today we're actually doing the show live from Arkansas, and I read in the paper yesterday morning when I got in town that they had new work requirements for Medicaid. And those work requirements are sort of bizarre, Professor Rank, because you have to apply, you have to verify your status and whether or not you're going to be doing your 80 hours of either work or nonprofit volunteer activity on your computer every 2 weeks. And that means you have to have a computer or you have to have wireless or internet access. I mean,
right.
You know, talk about this is not really a plan to get people to work and join the world. And the governor and the legislators argued this will introduce the poor to the digital new modern society. Well, not without the tools, but what that means is we'll have deteriorating health again for lower income children, and we'll pay even more for that later. And you came up with an estimate of how much more, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just to go off on the point you're making, which I think is an important one. You know, we are basically the only Western industrialized country that does not provide health care as a basic resource. You know, almost every other country provides this. We don't. And in fact, we actually wind up paying much more than all of these other countries. In fact, I believe we pay twice as much as the next nearest country. So the issue here is it's not a question of paying or not paying. It's a question of how we pay. And this gets to this study, the study on the childhood costs of poverty. We know that prevention and money up front is generally much better spent than money on the back end of the problem. And so so what we came up with was an overall annual estimate of childhood poverty costs the United States a little bit over $1 trillion a year.
Let's underline that. We're talking about
$1 trillion,
not a couple of billion. $1 trillion a year. Amazing.
That's right. $1 trillion. And to put it in context, this was for 2015. In 2015, the total federal budget was $3.7 trillion. So in other words, this was about 28 or 30% of the total federal budget in 2015. So this is a huge cost that we wind up paying every single year.
And to just talk about how ass backwards this is, we have a Speaker of the House who's leaving. We have a number of conservative legislators who talk about, well, our big project next year is going to be cutting back on these entitlements because they are so expensive, they're driving up national debt. Meanwhile, your point, we're spending almost a third of the total budget because we refuse to be preventive and only are trying to put Band-Aids on the back end.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. It just blows my mind. I don't know how you and your associates do this research without going home with a migraine every day. But, you know, this is just so crazy, I'm sure, for an academic. As an organizer, it's, okay, this is normal, but oh, my God.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, in fact, the I had a few weeks ago op-ed in the New York Times on this study, and one of the sort of ideas behind this was, you know, these legislators talk about the high cost of these social safety net programs. Well, first of all, compared to other countries, we spend a very small amount, again, compared to other countries. But it got me to again thinking that, you know, the logic here is really backwards. In other words, we're not understanding what the fact that we have such high rates of poverty costs us. So So yeah, it is kind of, you know, it does kind of make you go crazy because the research is, you know, it's overwhelming that poverty is a very destructive condition for both children and adults. And if you can prevent people from going into poverty, you wind up saving a lot of money. So another aspect of this study that I think was really important was we said, okay, for every dollar we spend on reducing childhood poverty, how much would we save in the long run? And we had several different estimates, but the most conservative estimate was for every dollar we spend reducing childhood poverty, we save $7 in the long run. So, you know, that's a really big bang for the buck.
Absolutely.
This is, you know, from an economic point of view, it makes a lot of sense to try to reduce poverty in the United States.
Let me tell you, anybody on who's investing on Wall Street would put any dollar they had down to get $7 later.
Yeah.
Look, we're talking to Professor Mark Rank, who's a professor of social welfare at Washington University in St. Louis, who, along with associates and co-authors, has done a seminal study on the cost of childhood poverty. I'm looking at table one right now, Mark, and
yeah.
I'm going to just read it and you can comment on it.
Yeah, I've got it in front of me.
Yeah, its type of cost is on the left, dollar amount. It starts with reduced earnings, this is annually, $294 billion, and it just goes on from there. Increased victimization, street crime, $200 billion plus. I'll just let you go through the figures.
Yeah. So then we've got increased health costs, which is $192 billion. Corrections and crime deterrence costs, $122 billion. And again, we get child homeless costs, child maltreatment costs, and you add all of these up and you get just over $1 trillion, $1.03 trillion.
Yeah. Who's rounding up?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we'll just call it a trillion.
Yeah, let's call it a trillion.
Yeah, we'll be liberal about it. And,
right.
The same point, obviously, in the Arkansas story that I ended up reading in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette yesterday, there are 1,000 counted homeless here in this central Arkansas area. You know, none of them have wireless and a computer they're walking around with to be able to qualify for Medicaid. And the rate of homelessness in places like Los Angeles and elsewhere continue to soar. And you're talking about almost $100 billion a year.
Yeah.
There has to be, I know we haven't done, you haven't probably done the equation, but providing some level, I mean, I've seen the studies from Denver and elsewhere, providing housing actually saves money in terms of taking care of the homeless. So have you factored that in, or is that just another figure that we could save even more money on?
That's just another, actually this raises a really good point, which is we only looked at, you know, six or seven things here. There are certainly many other things as well that we couldn't really factor in. But you can imagine that there are lots of costs that poverty has, both for children and for adults, that you just can't measure. I mean, one thing that you, as an organizer, I know are very aware and I'm aware of, is the psychological cost of living in poverty and the stress and the anxiety. Those things we just can't put a dollar value on, but they're very real. So, you know, in a way,
they end up with actual expenditures in healthcare costs.
Yeah, exactly. So in a way, I think we're being, you know, quite conservative here in terms of really just focusing on a few things and seeing that you know, even with those few things, it's really a huge cost.
I wouldn't be surprised if this will be one of the next research projects that Professor Rank is involved in, but not being an academic or peer-reviewed, I'd easily add another $500 billion in terms of what the cost is. Once you start talking about not providing, the cost of inadequate housing for families and how that ends up as in the same criteria, health, mm-hmm. you know, reduced earnings, higher transportation costs, et cetera, et cetera. You're just talking about huge numbers.
Oh, yeah. And again, you know, Wade, in the conversations we have or that we seem to be having, you know, today in Congress and things like that, you know, this is not, this, you know, unfortunately is not at all on the radar screen. You know, people talk about, oh, we got to save this money by cutting this program and this kind of thing. And it's like, you know, we're missing the big picture here. The argument is, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So spending our money up front to prevent some of these issues is much smarter than spending the money on the back end, which is what we've been doing for a long time.
Well, you're anticipating the question I was going to ask next, which is whether or not there's been any encouraging reaction from policymakers to either your recent op-ed in the Times or to the completion of this study in March.
Well,
I'm crossing my fingers for the answer now, Mark. Come on, through for me.
Well, it's still early. You know?
Okay, good. Good answer.
It's still early, but people haven't been, you know, pounding on my door. I've heard from lots of other people, you know, folks that are involved in, you know, community organization and social justice groups and groups that are interested in issues of poverty. You know, certainly I've heard from lots of them, but no, unfortunately, I'm waiting to hear from some, you know, some folks in Congress about this.
Well, that may be later, but I mean, you start to wonder when we have so much pressure, for example, from corporations about tax rates, if they wouldn't start looking at what a smarter expenditure of taxes would mean in terms of poverty reduction along the lines of what your study is.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it just from a business point of view,
exactly.
You know, if we just focus on the economic productivity aspect, you know, what most countries are doing in terms of their policy is investing in their people. And one of the reasons to do that is that it's smart economic policy. The more you invest in people, the more innovative they are, the better workers they are, this kind of thing. What we do is we basically throw workers away. You know, we write off huge portions of the population. And again, in the long run, that makes us less competitive in a global economy. So again, from a kind of a business or an economic point of view, I think it's very smart policy to, first of all, have folks avoid poverty, but secondly, to invest in our most important resource, which is really our children.
Well, that's precisely correct. And I'm not going to suggest you waste your time waiting for an opportunity to testify in Congress. What you need to do is, you know, put a tank of gas in your car, go over to Kansas, visit with the Koch family there, with the people who are really making policy now, you know, go to D.C., talk to the Heritage Foundation, because let's challenge them to come up with a better methodology or a better statement of what the savings could be by investing on the front end.
I mean,
They like to talk like that way about infrastructure, but what is infrastructure if not investing in, for example, our children?
Exactly. There is our most important infrastructure. So I think that that's a great analogy.
And were you able to follow? I mean, part of the, maybe this is yet another list on the research questions, but when we look now at the increasing reports of inequitable divisions in education and the resegregation of many of our school systems, and that lost potential because of a failure to invest in education has got to be huge as well.
Oh, for sure. You know, again, we in the United States are really an outlier in terms of how we fund education at the, you know, at the primary and secondary level. So, as you know, where you live, it plays a large factor in where you go to school, and where you live has a large factor in terms of the resources that your school has. And so we find these vast differences in the quality of schooling depending on where people live. And there's a large segment of the child population that is not getting a good education that then affects their ability to be economically productive and so on. And, you know, it's I teach a course on the American dream, and one of the big themes behind the American dream is the notion of equality of opportunity. That is that, you know, that everybody should be entitled to certain things that allow them to get ahead in life. And unfortunately, that's not the case here because, you know, if you're like in St. Louis, if you're living in North St. Louis, you're going to get a very substandard education, whereas if you're living in some of the suburbs or your kids go to private school, they're going to get a very good education. And so, you know, that just cuts against the grain of what America really should stand for. You know, we should be embarrassed that we have the highest rates of poverty with children and adults really in the Western industrialized world. That should be a standard that we say we've got to change that. You know, it's just not right.
It may not be right, but I think we have a new standard for embarrassment now in this country, and I don't think we, you know, given what we see in the daily news from the West Wing and the White House, there's no such thing as being embarrassed anymore, Mark, so we can't count on that.
We're
talking to Professor Mark Rank, who is a professor of social welfare at Washington University in St. Louis, about his studies along with colleagues of poverty. You know, one point you were just mentioning is how where you live impacts poverty and education. One of the very interesting things that just came out recently is Mayor of New York City, de Blasio, made exactly the same argument. And then recent studies show that a huge number of families are in transit to schools because there's open enrollment in schools in New York City. And turns out that this is part of the resegregation into poor educational facilities, that people are, some 70,000 children a day are in transit under the age of, or at 5 years old, the study said. It's not so much where they live. It really is the failure to invest in schools in an equitable way, which is also part of what we're seeing as a strike issue in places like Arizona, West Virginia,
right.
Oklahoma.
Right.
It's a very important change in tactics. Teachers aren't talking just about, hey, pay me more. They are.
Right.
They need to be paid more, but they're also saying, why are you disinvesting in schools?
Yeah, very much so.
We could be up to every dollar of prevention could be, you know, I'm trying to push you here, Mark. It could be $10 or $12 that we're saving later, you know.
In fact, what I said was, you know, we looked at this a couple of different ways. And another way that we looked at it, we actually did have a figure of for every dollar spent reducing poverty, you save $12 down the road. So you're on target there, Wade.
Was this on the paper? Because
I, yeah,
I,
this is
okay.
The paper.
So I may have just you know.
It's also in the paper.
Yeah, I probably just you know lifted it and didn't credit it for a second. That must have hit me, and I said, okay, I'm not making this up at all.
So here's another thing that that I think is interesting that your listeners might be interested in is, you know, when we talk about this issue of poverty, we just so often we think, oh, it's somebody else, it's not me, you know, I'm not affected, this kind of thing. What I've done with a colleague of mine at Cornell is we've put together what we call a poverty risk calculator. And this is a tool that people can go, and what you go to the website, and I'll give you that stuff when we end, but you go to the website, and you can put in several background characteristics, you know, your age, your gender, these kinds of things. And based upon really hundreds of thousands of cases and analysis that we've done, you will get an estimate of the likelihood of you experiencing poverty in the next 5, 10, or 15 years. And what I think a lot of people will find surprising is that their risk of poverty is far from trivial. That for a lot of people, they will at some point experience poverty in the United States. And I think this is really important because what it does is it says you actually have probably some connection to this issue even though you're not aware of it. And what we really need to do in this country, I think, is rather than thinking about poverty as an issue of them, we need to think about poverty as an issue of us. That we are all impacted by this.
Now, am I remembering wrong? A couple of years ago, wasn't an estimate you came up with. This is probably wrong, but it was close to 60%+ of people will experience poverty at some time during their lives.
That's right. So that's exactly right. So between the ages of 20 and 65, 20 and 75, it is around 60% of the American population will experience at least 1 year below the official poverty line.
That really is all of us. Of course, I can look at my Social Security statement now that I'm not, getting towards that age where they give me an annual readout and remember those great years when I was making, $20 a week back in the 70s starting Acorn. And, there was 10 years where I didn't break, four figures. And it wasn't just because the dollar was stronger in the 70s either, Professor Rank.
Right.
Let's go right into how people can find that poverty tool on your website. I saw it, but didn't work with it. But let's give people a sense of that.
Okay. So all you have to do is just type in confrontingpoverty.org, and it will take you right there. You'll go to the front page. It has various things. If people are interested in the cost of poverty study, this is also on the website. So you just go to the research section and you'll see the paper there. So it's all there. And one of the things that I think community organizations might be interested in is, using this tool. But then we also have a discussion guide so that if you want to explore different topics of poverty, this is kind of a good jumping off point. So we have various topics there, reasons for poverty, the effects of poverty, that I think would be useful for a lot of different groups.
Okay, and that's confrontingpoverty.org.
Yeah, that's it.
Huh. Okay, I'm trying to... I'm not on... I'm here in the studio. I'm not on wireless. I was going to pull it up while we were talking, but I'm going to spell it for people to make it easier for all of us who have that malady. CONFRONTING. That's confronting, and obviously poverty. There's no dot or inner dash, but straight through. Confronting poverty, POVERTY.org, puts you right on the site that Professor Rank was talking about. And having seen it before, the tool is also right there, and it's easy to manipulate from what I could tell.
Yeah, I think it's very user-friendly. And we've had, this has been up for a little more than a year, and we've had people visit from over 180 countries, and we've had close to 1 million page views. So it's being, a lot of people are using it. We're hoping to get it into, curriculums, for example, in high schools around the country, in particular social science courses and in college courses. So its use is growing, which is great.
The paper is actually called Estimating the Economic Cost of Childhood Poverty in the United States. Michael McLaughlin and Mark R. Rank are listed as the authors, and as Professor Rank was saying, it's available under the research tab. So we've got a minute or two left. Mark, what would you recommend? If you were going to ask people to do one or two things, either in the public or on the policy side, what could they do to help us get our arms around cheapening this cost?
Yeah, I think it begins with conversations that we're having right now, people talking about this issue, people who are in economic, tough conditions, starting to think about, are my representatives really getting at the issues that are of concern to me? So I think it begins with these kinds of discussions. It begins with, voting for folks that are going to, support policies that help prevent poverty. It's the range of things. And, Wade, you're known for your, community organizing. And so I would say, getting folks to organize around these issues would be really key.
Well, this is one of those great conversations where I talk about research and you talk about organizing. So there we go. That's only fair. We've been talking to Professor Mark Rank, who's a professor of social welfare at Washington University, who's done a, in my view, path-breaking study with his associates on the cost of childhood poverty. I'm going to repeat that to get a look at this tool and to access that report, confronting.org. Mark, thank you so much. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.